to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. We're in Montgomery broadcasting for the legislative session. But anyway, that will get underway later today. Joining us now on the line, it's the year anniversary of Trump's inauguration, I guess. He's been a year in office. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but Congressman Gary Palmer joins us on the line. Congressman, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. We always appreciate it. Well, it's been a year, and I feel like it really started out strong, but then, you know, just the natural forces of Washington and the Democratic Party were able to slow some of it down. You got the big, beautiful bill out of the way. And I guess what it's really, I'm waiting to see is the real tangible impact of that heading into the midterm. But what say you?
Well, I think people are going to see a pretty significant impact from that. You got seniors below a certain income who are on Social Security that will pay no taxes on their Social Security. And then for people above that income, they could get up to $6,000 in deductions on their Social Security taxes that they're having, income taxes that they're having to pay. No tax on tips and no tax on overtime up to $12,500. So you could earn up to $12,500 in overtime and not have to pay taxes on the income on the halftime. You know, you pay on overtime, you get paid time and a half in most places. And then just in general, the people who are going to benefit the most from the tax cuts are the upper, the middle income families. I know the Democrats want you to believe that it was tax cuts for billionaires, but that's pure baloney. I even confronted them, Jeff, you'd like this. They kept talking about tax cuts for billionaires. So I looked up how many billionaires actually got involved in the 24 election. It's like 130 something. 68% of them supported Kamala. So I think the billionaire problem's on their side, not ours.
I mean, that's kind of interesting that, you know, the top whatever, one-tenth of 1% leans so heavy into Democratic Party politics. Is it just out of fear, you think, or, you know, because it seems counterintuitive?
Well, I think it generally reflects where you started out from in life in terms of your beliefs. And a lot of these people were already left-wingers, you know, socialist types. And but some of them have come around. They're not as crackpot as they used to be. I read Bill Gates' book on how to avoid a climate disaster, and he was all in that we're all going to burn up if we don't just do all these drastic things. Well, he's now decided that climate's not that big a deal. Climate change, I mean, it's not that big a deal. We're not going to burn up. The economies are not going to collapse. I've thought about every time I go into an energy commerce hearing, having a big old poster of Bill Gates sitting behind me. It is interesting that the people who have benefited the most from a free market system and, want to tax everybody else. They don't want to tax themselves, but they want to tax everybody else. They want to be able to live the high life, but they don't want anybody, they want to impose all these rules on everybody else.
Well, it's a system that benefits them. Sure, they're taxing a higher rate. We have a progressive tax system in America, but the loopholes and the deductions and all of the tax credits, and they tend to favor those with power and influence who tend to be the wealthy.
Yeah, but people hear that somebody got, you could take somebody that's earning $200 million a year and they get a 5% tax cut. That's $10 million. If it's a 10% tax cut, that's $20 million. But let's just say it's 2%, $4 million. You take somebody who's making $100,000 a year and they get their taxes reduced 25%, it's going to be significant to them, but it's going to be a whole lot less than what somebody else has spent. And my numbers, I use those numbers just to make it simple, but Somebody making $200 million, that's not what they'd be paying in taxes. I don't know exactly what their tax numbers would be, but you get the idea that that's how the Democrats look at things. They want to take somebody who's making an extreme high income, gets a very minimal tax cut, and compare that to somebody who's making, 1% of what they're making, but it means a whole lot more to them. Do you follow me? It means more.
It's relative. Yeah. Yeah.
$5,000 means a whole lot more to somebody who's only making 70.
Yeah. It's relative to your income. And, it's a drop in the bucket to a multimillionaire versus someone making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. Right. So, yeah. That's an important point, but they don't look at it that way. And here's the problem. And I know we're way off course here. What the government considers wealthy and what really is wealthy in America. I think there's a big gulf in between.
Well, I grew up dirt poor, and I appreciated the fact that somebody who was very wealthy was willing to invest their money in a plant that I was able to work in to make a living. So, that those people making $70,000 to $80,000 a year, a lot of those people have those jobs because somebody who's a billionaire was willing to invest their money and build a plant or create a product that required skilled labor. So that's the thing about a free market is that you got to have people have money to invest to build things.
Joined by Congressman Gary Palmer here on the program. Congressman, your outlook going forward, you hear from these Trump guys all the time, the economists, that they anticipate things swinging, having a little bit of an upswing, taking up in the first half of 2026. Do you feel that way? I mean, do you sort of share that optimism?
Well, the economy has already far exceeded what the left said it would. And, I'm so disgusted with the Congressional Budget Office that does all these analysis. But they said the first quarter of last year, the economy would only grow like at 1.5%, and it grew at almost 3%. Then they said it was going to be 1.8% the second quarter. It grew at like 3-point-something again. And then in the third quarter, it was right at 4%. In the fourth quarter, it was even better. But that message is not getting out. Gas prices are down, but gas prices are impacted by international events. What's going on in Iran is going to impact it. We're putting ourselves in a position where it's really going to benefit people. I mean, you look at eggs back the end of the Biden administration, where some places like $8 a dozen. Now it's back down to a normal price. And I could go on. I mean, I saw gas in Tuscaloosa, $2.05 a gallon. And I've heard people tell me that's below $2 a gallon. When's the last time you saw that? And I just went back and looked at December of Biden's, I think it was Biden's first year, and then December of Trump's first year. And gas under Biden had gone up to $3.30. It was $2.39 at that point in Alabama. The average person fills up about 60 times a year, between 60 times a year. Jeff, that's a savings. Just that change was a savings of over $1,000 up to $1,300. And for people like most of the people that listen to your show, most people you and I know grew up with, that's significant.
Yeah. What do you make of the Greenland discussion? And it's hard for me to know how seriously I should take it. Now, Trump is on his way to Davos, or if he's not there already, for the World Economic Forum. And, talk a little bit about what are you hearing about that and what do you make of it?
Well, I really don't think we want to take over Greenland. But at the same time, we can't let China come in and take it. And they will. They'll buy their way into it. That's what they've done in South America. When we hang up, I'm going to send you a link to a map that obviously in radio you can't show it, but you can describe it. That just shows how we have been asleep at the wheel. I talked to the former Canadian conservative leader in the Canadian Parliament about Greenland, and I said, you know, China declared themselves a near Arctic nation. They're nowhere near the Arctic, but they declare themselves that so that they can claim a right to the mineral resources in that area. And I told this lady who was the former conservative leader in their parliament, I said, what has Canada done to protect itself? And the same thing is true of Greenland. There's no way Denmark can hold off China. China's not going to invade, but to just resist their will. So that's what we're trying to do, is protect our own region from further encroachment by the Chinese and the Russians, for that matter. Russia does have a legitimate claim because they are a near Arctic nation.
Well, and so, you know, my take is, even if China or Russia or whoever were to try to plant a flag in the ground in Greenland, the United States would step in for Denmark regardless of what happens in this sort of drama, right?
Well, we would, because it'd be an Article 5 violation under the NATO articles, but that's not what they're doing. They're buying their way in. They're already up near the Arctic Circle, and the Arctic Ocean is a fairly relatively shallow ocean compared to the other major oceans, but they're up there exploring and probing, and we don't know what all's in Greenland, but we do know that we're in a national security emergency in regard to a supply chain of refined rare earth elements. I've been working on this for 5 years, Jeff, and the White House is, when Trump came in, it was a sea change in attitude about this. Biden did nothing to secure our supply chain. And our economy would absolutely collapse if China cut us off. And they were threatening to do that starting December 1st of last year. So I'm working, as a matter of fact, after I talk to you, my next call is to the White House about some meetings that I've had that I think are going to be very helpful. But there's not a major refinery for rare earth elements in the Western Hemisphere. There's only 9 in the world. 8 are in China, 1's in Malaysia. And that's an Australian company. And that we made a deal with Australia back in the summer for them to expand their facility and build a new one. So there's just so much going on that the Trump administration is doing that has a tremendous impact on your future, my future, everybody listening to you, that most people don't even know about.
Congressman, the other, I guess, kind of global hotspot, Venezuela, and what Trump did there with Maduro, and, you know, what's done is done. What do you think happens next there?
Well, I think eventually they'll be allowed to have free and fair, and I want to emphasize fair elections. Machado got 70% of the vote, but they declared Maduro the winner. And that's probably what really tipped the scale. Maduro is a thug. They killed people. They tortured people. They drove the country into the ground. I've been working on a Western Hemisphere alliance as a soft power alternative to China, and things have really started changing there. That we've had a really good election in Honduras and Bolivia and Chile. But what happened in Venezuela was a hard power move. But sometimes a hard power move makes the soft power approach a lot more attractive to these countries, and that's what we're seeing. Privately, a lot of people have told me, and I've talked to quite a few people from that region, they're very pleased that Maduro is no longer in power. So I think it's going to work out positively for us. And particularly with how we've decided that we're going to take seriously that we're in a war with drugs, not a war on drugs, a war with drugs. That in the 4 years Biden was in office, Jeff, we were averaging over 100,000 people per year dying from drug overdoses. In Trump's first year, it's down to 73,000, which is still a horrendous number. But the rate we're going right now, it'll be down into the 40s because we've secured a border and we're taking out these drug boats. And I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of cartel action in Venezuela in the coming months and years.
Yeah, and you know, that was something Democrats really latched onto for a while. It's funny watching the messaging here go from I guess initially it was healthcare subsidies, then Venezuela, and now they're on to Greenland. But, you know, with all that in mind, how do you feel about the midterms?
Well, I am guardedly optimistic that we're going to do a second reconciliation bill on healthcare. And the bill that right now, if we were to do it today, will be my bill. It's H.R. 1776. That ought to be a bill number that will be easy to remember. And the speakers behind it, I think we've got folks at the White House that like it. We put a lot of effort into this thing. And what the plan is to take the good ideas that other members have, incorporate them into H.R. 1776, and we're going to call it the American Healthcare Freedom and Affordability Act. It doesn't touch Obamacare, so if some of your listeners like their Obamacare, I will assure them they can keep their Obamacare. It creates a parallel marketplace where people can buy the health insurance they need and can afford. It requires price transparency, so if there's a doctor that you want to use that's not covered by insurance and their cost, they'll have to tell you what their cost is. The doctors in your plan will have to tell you theirs. If the doctor you want to use is lower, your insurance has to cover it, and it covers people with pre-existing conditions. And just the base bill, if we just do that, a couple in their 40s with two kids will save them $9,000 a year in premiums.
But you think this is, looking at the midterms, this, you know, it's hard to see big gains for Republicans or even keeping the House in some ways. But, you know, what do you think electorally? How do you feel about it? What do your colleagues tell you?
I think, well, I don't, you know, it depends on where they are, how they feel about it. But I think we can not only hold the House, we might can pick up a seat or two, largely because I think things are changing. People are realizing that things are changing. But the thing that people need to understand is if we don't hold a majority, as soon as the Democrats are sworn in as a new majority, they're going to impeach Trump. And everything that we try to do is going down the tubes. Do people really want an open border again?
Right.
Do they want to be back over 100,000 people per year dying from drug overdoses? Do they want $8 a dozen eggs? I don't think they want that. Now, we got to do a better job of messaging, and I pound it and pound it and pound it, telling my colleagues to get on local media like I do with you.
Right.
I mean, I think you've got to talk to the people who are going to vote for you, and you got to tell them what you've been doing. And so I think we're going to get out and get that done. Going on Fox is great, but there are more people live in Alabama than listen to or watch Fox News, and a lot of the people watching Fox News live in Alabama, obviously. But it doesn't help the guys in Ohio and Pennsylvania and places like that.
Congressman, we're way long here, but we got to get out of here. But thanks for hopping on this morning.
Oh, I always appreciate you having me on. Sorry for being a little long-winded.
That's all right. We appreciate you coming on. Congressman Gary Palmer there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. I may become a highwayman again.